You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today we are talking about Freud, Sigmund Freud, and his concept of the id, the ego, and the superego.
Egocentrical.
So what we're going to try to do is we're going to try to break this down into something that is understandable first to us, and then hopefully it makes sense to you, our audience, who we really only care about. We don't really care about ourselves, right?
Both.
Okay, it's both. But the idea is ego. You know, we think we know what it is, right?
We think, but it's so complicated now.
We're so smart.
Every time that you learn more, you say, oh my gosh.
Well, his concept of the ego is a little different than, I think, what we call ego. Oh, mm-hmm. I've got a strong ego. Well, it's not necessarily the same thing, and the id and the superego, how those all fit together. I think the concept of breaking down anything into components that explain something is part of what psychology is all about. Psychology isn't saying this is what it is. They're trying to give an understanding of things that are really complex. So breaking down the brain and us and our personalities into the id, the ego, and the superego is just a simple way of saying, let's look at ourselves as multiple components of one person, these underlying factors that help mold our behavior.
Mm-hmm. And also the way that we try to bring the program is a lot of example, because I guess by example is the best way that we can get at the point.
We want to lead by example. Mm-hmm. Starting off that way, the ego and the id in relation. And what's interesting about this, if I can remember how it was done in Freud's book, is Freud's book, I believe, is in German, or at least it appeared to be, and it was Das Ich und Das Es, or something like that. Ich and Es, which in German is I and it. So us calling it the id and the ego and the superego, somebody took what he wrote and converted into English, thus changing kind of the concept a little bit in what the actual original words meant. Maybe they were more simple in German. I don't know.
But in Spanish, it's the same. It's ego.
Is it? Well, let's discuss a little bit about Freud, because it's kind of interesting understanding his background. Mm-hmm. To understand how he developed these terms and these concepts. He was born in 1856 in Freiburg, Moravia, the Austrian Empire, which is now the Czech Republic. He was born to his father and mother. Isn't that kind of obvious?
It's normal.
But that's, and I'll take this thing off the screen, but we'll discuss it. Jacob and Amalia. And what was very interesting about this is that the father was not a very wealthy guy. He was a merchant. And Amalia was Jacob, Freud's father, or Sigmund Freud's father. Amalia was Sigmund Freud's father's third wife, and about 20 years younger than Jacob Freud.
So it looks like you and me.
Exactly. So here we are, the new Freud and Amalia. I'd like to introduce you, Amalia Lisette.
I like the 20 years younger.
20
like
years younger. He was actually uncle to his father's first wife's son's son, who turned out to be older than Sigmund. So Sigmund was uncle to his nephew. The nephew was older than Sigmund.
Yeah.
Which, so you start to think about this and think about his early childhood of having this multi-stem family with his young mom. Also, something I learned in reading about Sigmund, he was the family favorite. So he was the spoiled child. He was the eldest of Amalia. So Amalia being the third wife, he was the eldest son.
Okay.
And I guess there was maybe some of these concepts he developed later in life were based upon his own upbringing. Kill the father and marry the mother. I don't know.
Okay.
But we're not going to talk about that. That has nothing to do with the id, ego, and superego. Mm-hmm. But it kind of gets you to think about Freud and his focus on psychoanalysis.
Yeah.
And that it was early childhood trauma that contributed to the problems and behaviors that we had as adults, and he constantly focused on that. Even in the analysis of dreams later on, it was trying to get to, are these dreams something that is reminding you of a trauma that's been repressed, or is it something that you're thinking about daily that's bothering you? Anyway, again, nothing we're talking about today. Reeling back. So he spent 8 years in school.
Mm-hmm.
When I say school, college. Before he went to college, he was like first in his class year after year in school. So he's a smart guy. He went to college for 8 years. Should have only been four, but he liked it so much, he kept going. He went in for medicine at the beginning. Actually, he was going to go in for law. But then he decided, oh, he liked medicine.
Okay.
And then during research, he liked going more into the things, the subjects of
psychology.
Investigation, psychology, physiology, neurology, things to do more with the mind and the body. He also had some very progressive teachers.
Okay.
Teachers not from Germany, but from outside the country, who had very open and more progressive thoughts on psychology, neurology. They also happened to be strongly against pious and metaphysical reasons for behavior. So in the past, people would be, oh, why is that person acting that way? Oh, they've got a demon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Freud and his school of thought was, no, there is something actually going on inside that person that's causing this behavior, and a lot of it can be going back to childhood trauma, repressed thoughts, different things. And so he focused on realities, not on what
people believe,
beliefs and myths and demons and metaphysical things. So that was his focus, and that's why he was so good at observing, taking notes, and really focusing on, let me just study people, observe people. He wrote a lot of books, by the way. So last week, we bring this up a little bit because it brings us to some points in our discussion, is that behavior. What is behavior? It's how we respond to stimulus. It's our behavior. It is the outward signaling of how we are as a person, right? So humans have thoughts after stimulus,
mm-hmm.
before response. And we're going to stop there today because with Sigmund Freud, the id, the ego, and the superego, it's all about thought.
Mm-hmm.
It's how are people thinking, how are they dealing with reality? So we're going to focus on thought. And I can't believe that went backwards. Thought happening in the brain. And where does that lead to? Where does that go? And we're going to talk about the id, the superego, and the ego. We rearrange the order of it because if you describe what the id is,
mm-hmm.
according to Freud, what the superego is, the concept of the id, the concept of the superego, the concept of the ego. I was trying to figure out, oh, where in the brain is the id?
Mm-hmm.
Where in the brain is the superego? There's actually the concept of what they are. When you define what they are, you can kind of say these are the portions of the brain that interact
okay.
to provide that. We're not going to talk about that so much today. But we'll talk about, put it in relationship, is that the ego is how we, like our outward, how I'm talking to you right now, my quote, ego is in control of how I'm talking to you. Here's the environment. It's looking at the environment, looking at the camera, being here with Lizette, having all the information at our disposal, figuring out the plan of action of how to communicate that.
Mm.
Given my motivations, my id, the drives, the unconscious drives for survival, repressed materials and thoughts, trauma, that all the way down there unconsciously pushing up and trying to influence behavior. Mm-hmm. Why, on the other hand, superego is, I have to say the right words. I have to correctly use phrases. I have to try not to connect sentences together with words like ah or So all these things.
And not go to different topic.
Uh-oh. Don't go to a different topic. However, so superego is the morality, values, and beliefs. Uh-huh. And so showing this on the chart here, and I apologize if I didn't have it on the screen here, but here we go here, is that again, the ego using the eyes, the ears, the nose, the mouth, hands, touch, feel, that is how we are interfacing with the environment. That the ego is like a surface of us.
Okay.
How people see us, how we actually interact with the world, that is the conscious part of the ego, is that it is looking at the environment, what's around us, the context, the situations, the stimulus. That is the input to the ego. Then it is planning and calculating, defending from being hurt, protecting and doing all that from those outside sources. It's protecting our id and our superego and programming, actually sending information to the superego that changes as we change and evolve over our lives. It will change our values and beliefs. The superego is made up of societal rights. Mm-hmm. What is a societal norm? What's morality? What are the patterns that we've developed as a society that's in, not really inborn, but it's part of our learned behavior? And then unconscious guilt, the guilt we feel when our actions do not go against, do go against, when our actions go against our values and beliefs, that's where that guilt comes up, which is very interesting because this is kind of like cognitive dissonance.
Yeah.
That if our actions are going against our values and beliefs, we have unconscious guilt, which is the exact definition of cognitive dissonance. It's pretty interesting.
So how you can make a difference between ego or superego? What is the big difference?
Conscious versus unconscious. Mm-hmm. That the ego is constantly floating between the superego, which kind of like stretch. The superego is like laws, a governing body that goes, hey, stop that behavior.
Okay.
That it's kind of like, it's kind of like a harness mm-hmm. on the ego. It always says, do the right thing according to what our values and beliefs are and pre-programs. Do the right thing. The ego has to look at doing the right thing, but also weigh the, I want to meet that woman.
So the ego is more emotional and the superego is more rational?
There are people who put it as like, you've seen movies where there's like the little devil on one shoulder and the angel on the other. The superego is like the angel. The angel saying, always do the right thing. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to offend that person. So speak nicely to them all the time, even though you're angry. And of course, the devil or the demon would be like, do what you want. Get her. Take her out. Or, you're hungry? Go ahead. Go eat. Don't worry. Don't pay for it. You don't need to. So the one is just drives, innate drives without, you know, you're being pushed to do something because you just feel you need to do it. The id, which is that underlying innate drive, is from millions of years of evolution. Mm-hmm. It's our psychology that's inborn. They kind of say your inborn drives, your inborn personality that you're born with, mm-hmm. is your id. Part of that feeds into the superego a little bit, but the superego really is how you brought up. What are the values and beliefs you have because of your upbringing? What are the societal ones? It's a constraint placed upon us by society, as well as some internal things that we can't really explain based upon evolution. We still don't know enough. We know some things.
Yeah.
But again, ego is, just think about it, it's that thing that's right in between everything. It's looking at the environment with the eyes, the ears, the mouth, and nose, and it's saying, okay, I have this rule of all the things I need to do based upon the angel, and all these drives and motivations I have for survival, continue of the species, hunger, sex, all these things, and I have to make those decisions in keeping with everything. So it's a big, big chore, big responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk more about that responsibility, won't we?
When we come back,
a 90-Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions.
Welcome back to 90 Days Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Today we're talking about the id, the superego.
And the ego.
The ego. The ego has landed. I actually had a dream last night. That's interesting.
Yeah, what is your
of dream? Eagles.
Okay.
Of giant eagles, and they were eating fish. And then this giant vulture came up behind the eagles.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm thinking, what is that vulture? The vulture is...
The super ego.
It could be. No, I think the vulture is not the super ego.
Okay.
I think it's the id. It's like,
okay. It's
just going after that thing. Doesn't care if it's alive or dead, it's eating it. If it's dead, it's eating it. Where the ego is a little bit more, maybe, I don't know, cunning. They're both birds of prey in a way, right?
Yeah, but in the dream, everything is okay.
What does it mean? I don't know.
Victoria can interpret your dream. Yeah.
But the vulture could be like death and the eagle could be life. Who knows? Maybe the eagle's...
Okay.
So. What's next? What's next is this. This is what's next. Here we go. We'll do a quick review. The id is the subconscious. It's hidden in the shadows. Unreachable. You can't actually go and look into the id and go, what's my motivation be, you know, for this? Like, the drives you have, you can't actually go in and look at the thoughts. It's unreachable. It's not rational. It's seeking pleasure. That's one of the aspects. The drives that are developed through evolution, that there's, you know, millions of years of what has made humans what they are. We talked about this last night, is that one of the things is survival of the species. That humans want to eat, they want to have the basic protection, they want to mate, they want to procreate. That is like, those are the things, the drive. Sometimes we don't want to talk about it, but that's what it is. And deeply repressed material, typically of young childhood, where we still have access to those parts of our brain that aren't fully developed. So when we have access to those deep parts of our brain, those things get put into the id, that portion, the subconscious, that we can't really find.
Okay.
They affect us, but we can't really find. The next is the superego. Mm-hmm. It's partly conscious, partly unconscious. It's absolute and inflexible based upon our values and beliefs. It's also a moral conscious, morality and ethics based upon society. It's also internalized parental authority. So we talk about sometimes, who are your guardians, or the people mm-hmm. that you grew up with? What is the household that you grew up in?
Mm-hmm.
What did they teach you? Who were your friends at a young age? That those things become the beliefs you have, the values you have, the authority you have,
mm-hmm.
what rules you follow.
And then the program that you have, basically.
Yes, and then the unconscious guilt
mm-hmm.
when you're doing something that goes against that, and you're like, why do I feel this mm-hmm. cognitive dissonance?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's that. And then finally, we have the ego. It's conscious of the external world through the senses, as we talked about, through the eyes, the nose, the mouth, the ears. It attempts to resolve the id superego conflict, the angel versus the devil. Do this because it's your drive. Do this because it's the right thing to do. It has defense mechanisms, which we're going to talk about in a minute, which is to protect us from things that we think are going to do harm to us. And a lot of that is psychology-wise, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ego is partly conscious, meaning it does relate to the outside world, but it also goes down into the superego and gets feelings and drives from the id. It is the calculating, reasoning, and planning portion of who we are. So when we plan a vacation, that's our ego.
And this is where we are. Vacation mode, always.
When we want to go to Fantasy Island, that's our id. And when we want to go and do something and contribute to others, that could be the superego.
Okay. Now I got it.
Now you got it. Oh, what happens if these are out of balance with each other?
I don't know.
So when the ego is not in control, what can happen? When the id takes over, you can have a psychotic psyche. Every impulse you want to satisfy immediately, so you just do it. Sex, drugs, food, whatever it is, right? On the other hand, if your superego is in charge, too strong, you start to become neurotic. You have a neurotic psyche. You feel a lot of anxiety. You're guilty about everything. You're stressed out all the time.
Maybe over control?
Could be over control.
Okay.
And you could be on edge all the time, and you could be edgy to other people. And then finally, when the ego is in control, the other two are subdued. It seeks pleasure, but it also wants to avoid pain, and it wants to relieve the anxiety by doing the right thing. So it is wanting to seeks the pleasure and reduce tension, but it wants to do it the right way to not feel the guilt. So it follows the superego's guidelines as best it can while doing the things that it is driving it to do. So it works to develop a realistic strategy.
But I am confused. So the ego, by these, acting like the superego when it's strained, you know?
Because the ego still does get the chemistry, you know? When if you do meet a person that you're attracted to, the ego is feeling the release of chemicals. It's feeling that.
Okay.
So it can still want to feel that, but at the same time do something in the right way.
Okay.
So it still wants to have the same. It doesn't. It's not just saying it's not just purely right or wrong. Mm-hmm. Follow this. Follow that. Do what's best. It does. The feelings are part of the feelings are felt in the ego. What's the next thing here? Oh, so he. And I'm not sure if this is a Freud thing, but I remember this from others as well. The ego is riding the id and superego. So the id and superego is like this horse, and it just wants to do what it wants to do. It wants to buck, it wants to jump, it wants to run. And the ego needs to try to guide the horse to the right direction, calm it down, get it to the corral, feed it, get it water. And it all in an effort to allow the ego to get where it needs to go. So, in terms of what's conscious and unconscious, on the left here we have Freud's diagram of interaction of the id, the ego, superego, with the outside world. Of course, somebody was kind enough to change it to English. The ego kind of holds a balance in between the id, which is down below, where the instincts, fears, and selfish motives are, where repressed trauma and repressed thoughts and memories are shoved to hide, and reality, thoughts, perception, what is seen with eyes, interactions with people. So the ego floats in all of this, in the middle. It looks at the memory of stored knowledge of what it has access to. In the superego, it looks at what the superego is saying to do, looks at what the id is driving it to do, looks at, it's almost like, what is that called? Emotional intelligence, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
It is almost that balance of, you have these these forces of good, evil, and reality, and you're saying, okay, what's the best way to achieve the best outcome of all of these?
Yeah,
that's the
how
ego.
You balance, yeah, how you balance. So don't not see the ego like the bad stuff. The ego is really the, what is when you preparing chemical catalytic?
Catalyst?
Yes.
Catalyst to make things happen.
Yeah.
It could be that. Catalyst to make things happen. So what if you have an ego problem? Now, this is a typical, like when you have an ego problem where you say, oh, this person has a problem with their ego.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to use ego in that other term.
Okay.
You know, their head's too big.
Okay.
So what are some of the things that somebody in an office environment may have when they have an ego problem? Oh, you don't ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't need to. Why would I ask questions? I'm right. I don't need to ask questions, right? Ignoring feedback you don't like. Yeah, I could change that, but you know what? I'm right anyway. Why would I want to change? If I change, that means I was wrong. That's a bruise to my ego.
Mm.
I don't want to do that, so I'm, quote, protecting myself by ignoring the feedback. Only surrounding yourself with yes people. Again, big ego. I would only want yes people because if they don't agree with me, they'd be wrong because I'm always right.
Yeah.
The need for control. People with big egos need to have control. Stop looking at me that way. Yes?
No, I'm not looking at you.
Unable to ask for help. And I know we have that discussion all the time. I when I'm working on stuff, I like to sometimes just work on it. I don't want input because it's not, and this, I tell you, it's not an ego issue for me. For me, it's a ADHD issue, which in my case is that it's hard for me to stay focused on something when I am teamed up with people sometimes. Sometimes maybe it's an ego thing. Who knows? Maybe. Always having to win.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you always win in dominoes, so I don't always have to win. I let you win sometimes.
So you allow me.
I allow you.
Okay.
That's also a joke and also a sign of if someone actually believes that's what they do, that could be they have a problem with their ego.
Mm-hmm.
And then losing touch with people because you are so bound to wanting to be right all the time. You want to be the yes person. You want them to be the yes people all the time. And then you just become disagreeable.
Mm-hmm.
But it's their problem, not your problem.
That is a great therapy though, when you prepare this stuff. Yeah. Amazing.
Well, what I find so interesting is that I've read about Freud before.
Mm-hmm.
We were challenged on this id, ego, superego, whatever we call this, show,
uh-huh.
by one of our many listeners. Patrick, thank you again for call out to you, shout out,
yeah,
thank you,
appreciate it.
That this allowed us to go back into Freud to see what we found interesting,
mm-hmm.
what we thought was really insightful, and maybe areas that we could use in our own lives and our own studies.
And also try to share with others because this is part of the I guess the goal in the planet.
So understanding
you
yourselves.
Have some knowledge or some information because I read other stuff that say that really the knowledge is something not absolutely, and also it's partial. So you never have the truth, but you can deliver it in an easy way to the people understand some topic.
So when reading about Freud a lot of times, I go, okay, he wrote his stuff 170. Sorry, he was born 170 years ago. A lot of his books were written over 100 years ago. I guess all of them were. The information that he provides was very groundbreaking and very insightful. He did a lot of research, tons of research, wrote a lot. He had interface with many different psychologists at the time, people who were studying this stuff. So he's hugely influential. There's a lot to learn. And then you look at what we know today and what he knew then, and you go, how does this fit? we know a little bit more about the brain today, right? We know a little bit more about where thoughts are, where things are located. You can take his ideas and develop them further. However, some of the ideas he had were so, I don't want to use the word simple, but helped us understand things in a simple manner. Id, superego, ego. That when you looked at that, and then you could take those and say, break them down into brain areas and go, hey, that's actually how the brain works.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty good. I think we'll do one more section here before we take our break. And this is the interesting thing. Id, ego, superego in relationships, how we deal with other people. And this is where the ego starts to become a defense mechanism, right? So it's now a, let me go back to that, ego as a defense mechanism to protect us from what it sees as outside damaging forces. For instance, what does the ego do? It represses. So the lack of recall of an emotional painful memory. So repression for a child, say a child is abused and it's so painful that the child will actually push it out of memory and they'll forget. I know people who have been attacked as a child and they don't remember it. That they know something happened, they don't know what it was, they don't know who did it, but they know it happened, and it's a repressed memory, which means it's in the id, it's in the unconscious, and they can't actually access the memory, but it impacts their behavior. That's different than suppression, where something happened, it's traumatic, and you just decide you don't want to think about it. It's in your subconscious. If you wanted to think about it, you could recall it, but you choose not to. Suppress versus repress. Yes. Denial. You hear about this where people are in denial. So forceful refusal to acknowledge an emotional painful memory. A little bit different than suppress.
Let me repress. Let me one example of denial.
Well, they said like somebody was carjacked and it was very traumatic and they refuse. Someone says, oh, you were carjacked the other day. They just don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. So that is similar to suppression, that you're just saying, I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not going to think about it. It is denial. You know, I'm not an alcoholic. That's something in Alcoholics Anonymous, that people are in denial. They're just like, I'm not an alcoholic. Because they don't want to admit it, because once they admit it, they have to face it. Once they face it, they have to face the pain of realizing it's a very difficult thing to work on, and they'd rather just say, I'm not. Whatever it comes to. Reaction formation. This is an interesting one. Expressing the opposite of what we really feel when it would feel too painful to express the real feeling. If you've ever been in a situation where somebody's really, really, really angry, maybe it's you, and you want to yell at somebody, but you're like super calm. No, everything's okay. It's almost like a sarcastic
way to you.
Way.
And you...
It's you do the opposite of what you're feeling. The other was, oh, I heard you broke up with your boyfriend. You did? You broke up? No. You had a terrible breakup with your boyfriend or girlfriend or partner. And you're like, oh, I'm so happy we finally broke up. And you pretend to be happy. And you're pretending to be happy because that way you can fool yourself from being hurt.
Okay.
And you're fooling others. But deep down, you've never dealt with the pain of the breakup. So that's reaction formation. Projection. We talked about this last week, didn't we?
A lot, yeah. Projection.
Projection. Yes, the attribution of our own unacceptable thoughts or feelings towards another person. So if you are attracted to another person at work, and you come home and see your partner, and you start accusing them of having an affair at work with one of their business associates.
Yeah.
That it's projecting your own thoughts. Like, say you like stealing stuff. Well, now you think everybody steals stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that is projection, but part of that is actually how we think other people are like us. We think the whole world can get along with each other because that's how we feel. We think the whole world thinks that they can get along with each other. If we think everyone is conservative, or we think everyone is liberal, or we think everyone has our point of view, or at least should, that carries over into stealing isn't bad, everyone should think that. Or stealing isn't good, everyone should think that. We project our own thoughts as our thoughts should be the thoughts of everyone.
Yeah, and also the example they told you, the some family doctor, they try to treat somebody in the family, you remember? And they say, oh, maybe you have an addiction and take a lot of medicine or take a vitamin. And the other person don't have idea what is the doctor say because it's projected at the end of the next week.
You find out that the doctor
actually
has
this problem and try to project to one of the member family. So sometimes you project who you are. Also, angriness or feel jealous is maybe watching yourself first before you project.
When you point at people, use an open hand because when you point normally, one finger points away and three point back. So use an open hand. That way they all point at them. No, and when you hit, open hand hits, they're loving.
Oh, like that.
They're loving, loving hits.
Oh, is this close? Is it time?
When we come back, we'll talk more about how the ego protects itself and us from outside things that it determines could be threats to its safety, satisfaction, and role.
Okay, see you in a minute.
We're here at Inglenook at Francis Ford Coppola's new winery. Well, they've had it for a few years, but this is his library, books that he has read over the years that have accumulated in his knowledge and his ability to come up with amazing storylines, beautiful video edits, creativity of films unlike anyone else. Let's take a look at one of the books in his library. Here we have 90 Day Soulmate, How to Find Your Perfect Match in 90 Days by Lizette Guevara and James Gulmick, actually Jim Gulmick. Well, if it's good enough for Francis Ford Coppola, it's good enough for you.
Welcome back to our third and final segment of 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Today we're talking about the id, the ego, and the super ego, Jim. And the superego.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, baby.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of that, was that
some kind
displacement?
Show what is the next one.
The next one. Here we go. Displacement. Another way the ego protects us. It will redirect aggressive or sexual impulses from a forbidden action or object onto a less dangerous one. For instance, Lizette, that day you were at work and you got into the big argument with your boss and you were really angry at your boss and you wanted to say something to them, but you couldn't because that would have been forbidden to yell at your boss. So when you came home, you unleashed at me for no reason. Do you remember that?
I don't have boss. Oops. Yes, I remember that.
It's when you are very upset at somebody that you can't actually get upset at, and then you displace that anger to someone else that you're allowed to get angry with because, oh, we're close enough in a relationship that I can get angry with them. That's another way that these are bad things, by the way, all these things we're talking about. But the way we protect ourselves from, we're not going to injure ourselves at work. We're not going to hurt our own ego at work and our own way of advancing in our career.
And not just in home. So sometimes people also leave the office and driving aggressive with others. So you see somebody that you don't know and you acting so aggressive because your aggression is in yourself. So, yeah.
Got it. How about rationalization? Explaining and intellectually justifying our impulse behaviors. For instance, years ago, there was the Aesop's fable about the fox trying to jump and get the grapes. I'm probably going to remember this incorrectly, but the fox tries to jump at this bunch of really juicy looking grapes and just can't reach the grapes. It just can't jump high enough to get the grapes. So finally turns, thinks to itself, well, they're probably sour anyway.
Yeah.
So justifying not getting something by its bad. The other was the couple are looking to buy this beautiful new house and they get all their documents together, all their paperwork together. They go to the bank. The bank looks at everything. 2 days later, they get a rejection letter for the mortgage. They're trying to get a mortgage for the house. And the couple turns towards each other and says, you know what? The house was too big anyway.
Yeah, but I guess this way to handle situation protect yourself.
It does.
Because you don't want to feel bad. So you can looking for, so the best thing, maybe this is not the real house that we deserve. Okay. Maybe we found something better. So make a home,
It's not the right one at this time.
Yeah.
So sometimes I think we're learning in our own little discussion here that maybe these protections that the ego does for mm-hmm. us are good.
Yeah, yeah.
They're valuable. Mm-hmm. Okay, so they're not only bad, but mm-hmm. they're good too. They can go either way depending on what they are. Regression, the act of reverting to an earlier, less sophisticated behavior. For instance, a teenager or young adult gets into an argument, they're really upset, they go into their room and they grab a teddy bear from when they were 5 years old and they start hugging it and they curl up on their bed. That's a regression. Or an action or activity, of regression, such as maybe having a tantrum, mm-hmm. Regressing to a childhood behavior, having a tantrum with your partner rather than discussing it in an adult-like fashion. Sublimation, channeling aggressive or sexual energy into a positive, constructive activity, such as producing art or writing. So that's how come we have so many books.
Yeah.
No, it's when you're upset with your partner. For instance, you're upset with your partner, and instead of getting into an argument, you're like, I'm going for a walk.
Oh, you clean the dishes.
You clean the dishes, and you don't say a word. You don't talk. You're like, because you're just so angry. But it's sublimation. It's channeling it to something else until that energy goes away. And maybe that's, again, that could be a good thing.
Yeah.
If you never discuss the challenge or issue, that's bad.
Bad. But you can using this technique for calm down, and then you put in the table. Upset.
When it's less heated.
Mm-hmm.
Deal with things on a much more logical level basis. And that's what the ego tries to do. It uses that logic, planning, mm-hmm. I don't want to use the word scheme, but it's trying to do things in a logical method, not in an emotional method. It will take emotions into account when it provides solutions to you. So it does provide solutions. Hey, how can we get better solutions? What do you think?
No, I don't know what is a better solution.
Before we get to that answer, the other day we were talking and there was a little video on, and I'm not even sure if it was. It was one of these scientists, NASA guys, who does a lot of talks on TV. And he talked about what he learned in college and life. And I'm doing a summary because I've also used this idea in past conversations, which is you learn in college and in life. You learn new ideas. You learn to memorize things. You learn how to approach research and experiments. You develop patterns of success. Also, you develop patterns of failure. You understand what they are. And you develop new ways of approach. The point that he and we are making mm-hmm. is that everything we learn becomes a new opportunity to use this pattern of thought and thinking as a pattern of thought, thinking, and new behavior.
Okay.
So, you take a course in college, or you take a course at a night school, or you're taught something at work, Like, well, when am I going to ever use this again? Well, if you learn a skill, which is maybe a physical skill, and how to move this to this to this to this and do it quickly, you learn a connection between your brain and physical activity, which will then help in other things that you do. Maybe you decide to play tennis later or just sort mail at home. But there are things that you learn that you think will never be used for something else, but they actually build upon each other. The one thing that I think Freud misses in his approach to challenges is that he does it from the psychoanalysis standpoint, that he attempts to determine the underlying repression, the abuse, the Oedipus complex, trauma. He looks for these things, but he's not looking for really potentially, and when I say he's not looking for, who knows, maybe he did, but he's not around to answer these questions so we can ask them. Patterns and triggers can also be hidden. The point of reprogramming of thoughts, behaviors, and patterns, and reprogramming them through the ego and superego, was not something that he focused on. And I think that's something that others today bring to the table through cognitive behavioral therapy, through other sorts of therapy, that you can work on the patterns, you can work on reprogramming behaviors and thoughts, even ones that are traumatic. If they're really traumatic, we're going to say, okay, that's for, you know, a different topic or a different talk.
Different treatment.
Yeah. But when we talk about very, sometimes we think of one thing, like we talk in our book about what are your patterns of past relationships. In order to actually change your pattern, you need to know your pattern. And once you know your pattern, you can change your pattern. If we all believe that, that's basically cognitive behavioral therapy. We did that in this book, and we didn't even know we were doing it in this book.
Yeah. We look for the logical way, an engineering way.
It's an engineering way, right? We talk about what we learned in school. We learned about engineering. And it just turns out to be very similar, that psychology is kind of a engineering science of the brain. A lot of psychologists don't come from that direction. We come from that direction to begin with, and therefore it makes some sense to us.
Yeah.
Right? So let's go to this thing here of what is psychoanalysis. All things stem from the id, and long-term sessions need to uncover trauma, programs, etc. So psychoanalysis could be months and months and years of trying to determine what is this hidden thing in the id, whereas cognitive behavioral therapy looks at the feelings, thoughts, and actions that are happening now and attempts to create new thoughts and actions that can lead to a new feelings or to new feelings in the face of stimulus environment. I know that's a lot to take in, but what it's saying is instead of looking for the root cause of why you feel this way today, why am I scared of heights? I don't know. I could go on forever in psychoanalysis trying to find out why I'm scared of heights, and someday maybe they'll find out. Or I can work on cognitive and behavioral processes to help me get unafraid of heights. How about NLP?
NLP is a pretty good program for.
So neuro-linguistic programming. We both went through a number of programs of this, training sessions on. And you can find that people are helped with phobias, they're helped with anxiety through NLP, as well as CBT. So there are ways of helping people with these things besides psychoanalyzing why they feel this way. Well, let's work on the actual anxiety.
And also, I like the point that we can reprogram and feel like there is something that you can treat without medicine, without feel you are sick. Because you are over control or you are excited, maybe you can handle by understand yourself and reprogram yourself.
Understand yourself, reprogram yourself. And how we suggest doing it is brain growth versus muscle growth, very similar, is look at small incremental steps of looking from where you are to where you go. Set achievable goals, short-term ones. So which are we doing? What are we doing? What are we working on? the short time each day or daily, short time each daily. Work on these things daily.
Mm-hmm.
A short time. Don't spend 4 hours one day and no time the next day. And lastly, repetitive and consistent scheduled action. We talked about the ego being able to schedule things, being able to plan things, be able to work on things. Use your ego, plan, schedule, use it to connect the outside world to your inner world and change the programs that cause the feelings that make you feel satisfied, happy, and connected with the people that you love and those around you. Thank you.
There you go. Thank you so much. I'll see you the next week.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the Relationship Engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.